After all the chalk and all the press conferences, game day is finally here. I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Thomas Bradley. This is After the Score.
Welcome to After the Score from WOSU Public Media. I'm Steve Brown here with Thomas Bradley. A special episode this week as we dedicate the entire show to Ohio State and college football.
That's right. Steve and I look at Ohio State's defense, which was all too suspect last year, and we'll also tell you what to expect from Navy's triple option offense.
But first, most eyes will be on OSU's quarterback position. Mm-hmm. It's been 3 years since OSU opened a season with someone other than Braxton Miller under center.
Redshirt freshman JT Barrett takes over after Miller's season-ending shoulder injury. For more on Barrett, we called Doug LeMaurice from Cleveland.com and the Plain Dealer.
Doug, I think we're just so used to Braxton Miller, it's almost hard to imagine another quarterback for OSU. Help us get to know JT Barrett, exactly what kind of player he is.
I think he's a quarterback first, and it really is amazing when you think about Ohio State. The last 6 years, pretty much, between Terrell Pryor and Braxton Miller, they've had an unbelievable dynamic athlete at quarterback. Good quarterback, but guys who just with their feet to do amazing things. JT Barrett, I think, a little more of a traditional quarterback. Not a huge arm, good mobility, can get out and run. His teammates have said that, but is going to be a guy, I think, who's going to go through his reads first, going to look to make that quick throw. They like his release, but he's never played. So I think there is going to be, you know, there will be times when, because I think he's less equipped to make magical things happen when things go wrong, there could be some bumps. But I think as he gets older, he will more thoroughly and quickly progress as a guy who's out there making throws first.
I was joking with you on Monday that Urban Meyer compared him to Kenny Guyton three times and called him Guyton-ish. Is that the type of quarterback he is? A distributor and someone that's there to help the other players make the plays?
You know, I wrote a story even before the Braxton Miller injury that said JT Barrett is like half Braxton Miller, half Kenny Guyton, in that he is more athletic than Kenny Guyton. Kenny Guyton was really kind of an afterthought recruit, was a guy who came in way under the radar, certainly progressed to have a very good career. He put up huge numbers against terrible defenses. He was a great backup quarterback. We never really saw what Kenny Guyton would have been as a starting quarterback against good, solid college football teams every week. JT Barrett does have a higher ceiling, but as a distributor, as a leader, they've compared his leadership to Kenny Guyton from the start. The fact that Kenny Guyton was a captain as a backup quarterback told you a lot about Kenny Guyton. So those intangible Kenny Guyton things, I think that's what they're comparing him to. But JT Barrett does have a higher ceiling as a talent, I think, than Kenny Guyton had.
You mentioned that Kenny Guyton was a captain as a backup quarterback. OSU has just named five captains. Can you help us walk through the captains and why these people are identified as leaders of the team?
Well, they're sitting it down from eight, what they had last year, so that's good. We didn't know maybe they'd go to 12 this year or something. So the guys they have, I think, an interesting senior class that Braxton Miller, as an injured guy, is one of those captains, expecting him back for a fifth year, but he will be a captain this year. Jeff Heirmann and Michael Bennett, two guys who I think everyone saw as obvious, not just very good players, but personalities, guys who I think had clearly grown into those leadership roles and will be big contributors on the field as well. And then the two Grants, Curtis Grant at linebacker and Duran Grant at corner, are guys who really did evolve as players over time that maybe you wouldn't have when they were young players, singled them out as guys who were going to move into those roles. But I think they're good stories as guys who continued to work hard on the field, especially Curtis Grant, had sort of a star-crossed career as a big-time recruit who didn't pop right away. People thought Raekwon McMillan might take his job, so he not only kept his starting job to be a captain, it's pretty cool for him.
We talked about JT Barrett a little bit, but his backup now is Cardell Jones. What is the difference between these two guys? Was the choice obvious to name JT the starter when Braxton went down, or are they two guys that are really close in skill?
Difference in height, for sure. Cardell Jones is a strapping 6'5", 240-pound guy. Maybe he's not that heavy, but, I mean, he is a big, almost prototypical guy that you could see back there just standing in the pocket and is able to physically look over defenses and do that kind of thing. never talked about in the same way by the coaches as JT Barrett when it comes to those intangibles. Bigger arm. I think it was a surprise to some people, though, that Cardale Jones won the backup job behind Braxton Miller in spring. Not as much of a shock to me that JT Barrett is the guy now. Cardale Jones was a guy, he's a Glenville recruit. He's actually the same class as Braxton Miller. He's a redshirt sophomore, but he went to prep school for a year, then redshirted. So he's really 2 years behind, but he was sort of brought in through the Jim Tressel process. JT Barrett is Urban Meyer's guy. So they're very different quarterbacks. I think JT brings more of that intangible quarterback stuff, and he is a guy that Urban Meyer went out and recruited. To me, not shocked that JT Barrett is the guy. And I really don't buy the talk of like, yeah, they both could play, whatever. You know, I think those are things the coach has to say right now. I think you want a guy. I believe in the, you know, if you have two quarterbacks, you have no quarterback kind of thing. So I think JT Barrett, with the Braxton Miller injury, is their guy.
Barrett appears to have that position locked up right now. There are still some other position battles going on. Let's run through them real quick. Left guard Joel Hale and Billy Price still battling that out. Who appears to have the lead on that position at this point?
You know, I think we all heard the way Ed Warner talked about Billy Price early in camp, and it made your ears perk up a little bit like, wow, he really likes this guy. Super strong, super weight room guy. But I think has good technique, that kind of thing. Joel Hale, a senior coming over from the defensive side. I think they want Billy Price on the field if, as a redshirt freshman, he's proving he's ready. I think he will be the starter eventually. The only thing that would maybe hold it back right now is if he's not quite ready as a young guy, but I think he's the guy they really like.
Another interesting battle on the outside at the cornerback position. Duran Grant, the captain, is locked down, but Armani Reeves might be shifting around. Eli Apple, Garyon Conley. Who's going to be playing the corner position for the Buckeyes?
Well, you know, the Duran Grant locked down as one starting cornerback, and then opposite him, the surprise to me is Armani Reeves is not really in that fight anymore. He's the guy that people thought was maybe going to be that other starting corner. He says he's a nickelback now. I don't think the nickel's going to play as much with the way their defense is shaping up. So that's really a step back to me. The fact that Garyon Conley and Eli Apple are the two guys fighting for that spot, that's the starting spot. That nickel spot is not what it used to be in this defense. So for two guys, for two redshirt freshmen to be fighting to start, I mean, you can say, hey, great, that's great young talent. Or you can say, hey, wow, not sure about the second corner spot if those are your options right now. So I think that's definitely a question mark to me. I don't know who it's going to be. But I think whoever it is something we have to keep an eye on.
One other position battle we've heard a lot about, the safety position, Von Bell and Cam Burrows. How do you see that one playing out?
That is the one spot where I believe when they say, you know, they like the option. Some of, you know, again, Urban Meyer keeps saying all this good stuff. You know, if they had All-American, there'd be guys winning these jobs. The fact that some of these fights are going on this long, I don't take as a great sign. That spot, I believe they like both. You know, Cam Burrows, that he's been in this fight, I think is a great thing for him. I think he will be involved with this defense. To me, it just seems like it's going to be hard to keep Von Bell off the field, though. I think Von Bell will be that guy.
Meyer said on Monday he's got six guys that he would throw out there at wide receiver. Obviously, the two seniors, Devin Smith and Evan Spencer, are returning, but there's four other guys that could play. What do you see at the wide receiver position?
Yeah, I don't know. I also am not completely buying the good problem there. When you have two seniors in Devin Smith and Evan Spencer, and all of a sudden, you know, those are established guys who have been your starter. Okay, are they your starters or not? You know, like the fact that guys have caught up to them, but yet we're not saying that Corey Smith and Michael Thomas have won the job outright. You know, I'll take Sammy Watkins. Give me the guy that you know that's the guy. I don't know who the guy is for sure in this receiver group. To me, Jalen Marshall and Dontre Wilson are a little different. They're really in that H-back slot receiver role. So you have these four other guys for the two outside receiver spots. I'm waiting for someone to prove to me they're going to be a guy who can make a big catch on third down, especially with a young quarterback. So, you know, again, Urban Meyer says they have six. I'd take one sure thing, no doubt about it, and fill in the rest. The fact that you have six for three spots, to me, is not really a great sign.
We've been talking about the OSU quarterback position and other position battles on the team with Doug LeMaurice. He covers OSU sports for Cleveland.com and The Plain Dealer. Doug, thanks as always.
Thank you.
Stay with us for just a moment. After the break, we'll be right back with another OSU writer to talk about the Navy game coming up and the defense.
And OSU's depth chart was posted just hours after we talked to Doug. A lot of questions still unanswered, so everything seems to be still relevant. We'll have the full depth chart of what's available posted on our website at wosu.org/afterthescore.
And as promised, we are joined now by Patrick Max from the OSU football website, 11warriors.com. Patrick, the defense was absolutely the weaker of the two units last year. That might not be the case this year, though, right? Especially with the Braxton Miller injury.
You know, it's hard to say because, you know, on one hand, you lose Braxton Miller, and that's such a gaping absence on the Ohio State offense. But at the same time, the defense remains relatively unproven. I mean, granted, the defensive line is going to be stacked with Noah Spence, Joey Bosa, Michael Bennett, and Adolphus Washington. Now, obviously, Noah Spence won't play in the first two games, but still, I mean, the defensive line is expected to be one of the best in the country. But at every other position, you have talent, but you still have question marks. I mean, the linebackers remain unproven. You know, Curtis Grant and Joshua Perry started last year, but they weren't necessarily exceptional players. Durant Grant was pretty good for Ohio State last year, and I think he could be an All-American. But at the same time, you have either Eli Apple or Darion Conley starting across the field, both of which have not played really much at all for Ohio State. At safety, you have Tyus Powell, who kind of came in. I think he played six games last year, or he played all 13 and started six games last year. But he's still a young kid. He's a redshirt sophomore. And then the other free safety spot, or the other safety spot, you have Von Bell and Cam Burrows, neither of which played much. So, you know, I think it's easy to kind of lean toward and say the defense is all of a sudden the stronger unit of Ohio State's offense. But I think you could argue, I mean, both to say it's necessarily stronger, I'm not sure it's accurate, but I can see why people would say that.
I mean, Chris Ash is coming in and implementing his quarters coverage system. What kind of difference is that going to make in the secondary? And, I mean, none of these guys have played that system before.
Right. And I think what you're going to see is you're going to see an Ohio State defense, I think, that's more aggressive. And it's able to defend the pass more efficiently than it did last year. And I think it's important to talk about the quarter scheme and the coverage. But I really think what's a big difference for Ohio State this year compared to last year is ideological alignment between the front end of the defense and the back end. And I think Chris Ash and Luke Fickell might mesh together more. They might mesh better in terms of how they want to go about stopping opposing offenses, whereas maybe the Everett Withers, Luke Fickell experiment was somewhat of a clash of different ideologies, different ways to go about defending the pass. And I think that's why you saw so many breakdowns. I think it was schematic, and I think it was chemistry issues. With the quarters defense, I think it gives Ohio State the best opportunity to put players that are long and athletic, and because you have talented kids on the outside and in the back end. You know, I think a guy like Tyus Powell, to me, stands out. He is, 6'2", 210 pounds, or 6'3", 210 pounds. He's extremely long and lanky. So if you put someone like him in his zone and you just let him kind of free roam and do it, I mean, if you let a playmaker make plays, it's going to help you out. And I think Ohio State limited itself last year.
Luke Fickell, obviously, most famous for filling in for Jim Tressel the year after he was fired. How much say does he have on a day-to-day basis with the defense? I know Chris Ash is kind of viewed as the mastermind behind this new defense, but how much say does Fickell have on a day-to-day basis?
Right, it's kind of hard, you know, because I think that's I don't want to say it's a misperception, because I think it is accurate to say that Chris Ash really has kind of come in and kind of corralled the defense and sort of, you know, opened the impetus for this this overhaul. But at the same time, at least what we've heard from the players and what we've been told in interviews and stuff is that there was a point after last season where Luke Fickell, you know, kind of sat down with his staff and sat down with the players and kind of was like, no, this cannot happen again. Last year, and especially the last three games of the season, where Ohio State just got torched. I mean, they were one of the worst defenses in the country for the last three games of the season. I think Fickell sat down with the staff and was like, this cannot happen. So I think Fickell has more of a say in this, in what you're going to see on the field on Saturday and the rest of the season than people are necessarily giving him credit for. It's like, yes, the back end is going to be different because of Ash and because of the quarters coverage, and like that's obviously a glaring difference from last year. But at the same time, I don't think you can just count Fickell out as not being part of the change.
These guys went through their spring practice preparing for spread offenses, summer practices, fall camp, and they're thrown a bit of a curveball in the first week with the triple option threat from Navy. What is Ohio State going to be seeing as far as Navy's offense, and how are they prepared to stop it?
Right, and it's hard because this is kind of one of those offenses where you might see it. I mean, they're obviously going to see it Saturday, but you might not see it for 4 or 5 more years. And I mean, it's been 4 or 5 years since Ohio State played Navy, so 5 years since they've probably seen this kind of offense. So you go through the entire offseason, like you said, preparing for, general what you're going to see on a week-in, week-out basis. Navy is a massive curveball, and they have the personnel that fits that style of play. It kind of goes without saying, Navy doesn't have the talent that Ohio State has. It doesn't have the talent that normal blue-blood Division I programs have. It's the service academy. But at the same time, the kids that go to Navy, they're training to be officers in the military. I think Joshua Perry said it best. He said these guys are, like, trained to be warriors. I'm paraphrasing. But you're going to see a Navy team that's going to come at Ohio State. And it's cliche, but it's really true here. You're going to see a Navy team that's going to come at Ohio State every single play, whether they're down 3 points or down 21. If Ohio State lets off the gas pedal, you can see what happened in 2009 where Navy had, like, 13 points in the fourth quarter to, almost upset Ohio State in Ohio Stadium. On top of it, the triple option and wishbone and all that stuff, it really fits Navy's personnel. They don't have 6'6", 300-pound offensive linemen. They have 6'2" guys that are 260 pounds. You have a quarterback that's maybe, I think, around 5'11", 190-something pounds. You have skill players that are not necessarily blazing fast. What the triple option does is it gives Navy its best chance to, win the game. If you have Keenan Reynolds sit back and try to throw a pass every play, defenses are going to eviscerate the offensive line and sack him literally every single play. So what this does is it gives Navy a chance to really hang in there with any of these teams that they're going to be overmatched against, like Ohio State.
Mm-hmm. Patrick, I guess our last question for you. What are the coaches and players saying about opening on the road for the first time in 15 years? Do they have any thoughts on that?
It's kind of interesting because I think the last time Ohio State opened on the road, it was like 1990. Now, when they played Miami at the Meadowlands, I can't remember the year. I think Thomas probably remembers it better than I do, actually. They lost to Miami. So I think that's kind of in the back of their heads. But it was such a long time ago that I think opening on the road, whether you're playing at home or opening on the road, you're still playing a football game. I don't think a lot's been made necessarily of the fact that they're going to open on the road and not in Ohio Stadium. I think really what's kind of been the swirling storyline is obviously that's kind of a new thing with them opening in Baltimore. Plus you couple that with an offensive line that has yet to be solidified, a defense that completely went an entire overhaul, and you're playing with a redshirt freshman quarterback who hasn't taken a competitive snap of football since October 2012. And when you couple all those things together, plus playing a service academy that's trained to be warriors and trained to come at you every play, they're very disciplined. Like, Navy's not going to beat themselves. Like, Ohio State has to play a very fundamentally sound and smart football game. And if they don't, there could be issues considering all the holes the Buckeyes have.
A lot of questions that are going to be answered just a couple days away. Ohio State opens against Navy at noon on Saturday in Baltimore in the Ravens Stadium. Patrick Max is a beat writer for 11warriors.com. Patrick, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, guys.
We're fascinated with OSU football here in Central Ohio, but around the nation, most of the offseason headlines focused on the new playoff system.
This is the first season college football will be using the new 4-team playoff instead of a single championship game determined by polls and computer numbers known as the BCS. And the 4 teams will be picked by a 13-member selection committee. The
human element is back.
It is.
It's bigger than the computer element. I like it. If nothing else, I don't care necessarily that much about the selection committee and how these teams are selected, but there's a 4-team playoff.
Yeah.
which is awesome.
I think there's always going to be arguments about who should get that fourth spot.
Right, who's four or five.
I think one and two, year after year, is going to be clear. Three probably even will be clear. So if you had an 18 playoff, I think number eight would be in contention all the time. I think number four would be in contention. It's a step in the right direction, I think, to finding a true champion instead of having computers decide who plays each other, leaving someone who probably is deserving out. I like the move by college football. I'm not buying the fact that polls are now irrelevant. That's one thing I've seen by a lot of people, that all these college football polls, there's no more BCS polls, the AP polls, all these are irrelevant. They're not irrelevant anymore.
No, they're relevant in that they factor into people's votes.
Yeah, if the selection committee picked a team 6, 7, or 8 on the AP poll for that fourth spot, then polls are irrelevant, but I don't ever see that happening.
You think it'll always be the top four?
I think it'll most likely be the top four with some very few exceptions at number five, number four. If they ever pick number 6, number 7, number 9, number 10 for that fourth slot, there's something wrong with the selection committee, because the polls are a true poll. The AP poll is a poll of all the writers in the country. Despite what you may think about your local AP writer, that they do know what they're talking about. So if the selection committee goes off the cuff and picks number 7, we have a problem with the selection committee.
I'm worried about some influences. These people, when you're 13 members, as opposed to how many AP writers are there? I mean, hundreds, if not several thousand. Yeah. I don't know. But when you have 13 people, these people seem much more susceptible to influence, and the whole system seems a little more susceptible to corruption and nepotism and greasing people's palms and things of that nature. That's my fear.
I think they are people that are in positions of power in college football and in the world, mm-hmm. really. Condoleezza Rice is several
athletic directors, some conference chairmen.
So I think they're going to approach it in the same way the college basketball committee approaches it, that if we're talking about, say, Gene Smith was on it, OSU athletic director, when the conversation comes up to talk about Ohio State, I think in basketball, Gene Smith excuses himself from that conversation. And I think that kind of protocol will probably be happening in the 13-member committee. Say LSU's athletic director is on the panel. I think if we were talking about LSU, he wouldn't contribute to that conversation.
That's probably true. And I imagine with four teams being selected instead of 68, like the mm-hmm. NCAA tournament, there should be a lot less disagreement. But a little controversy is good. I think we need a little controversy. The BCS, say what you want, college football popularity did not decrease under the BCS at all. It was an interesting thing. Even if you hated it, it was attention grabbing.
It was. And there's always going to be contention about the fourth spot, but there could be contention about the number one and number two spot. Two teams go undefeated. Which one has to play the 3 seed? Which one has to play the 4 seed? There's always going to be a little bit of drama and contention when it comes to picking these spots. An interesting thing I did see, though, not having to do with playoffs and polls, saw on the Lantern in Wednesday's edition, the average ticket price for Ohio State games has gone down since Braxton Miller's injury.
Well, yeah.
Significantly.
Well, yeah. After you were talking about the secondary market, StubHub,
the TicketTree, or whatever, TicketOak, all these secondary market tickets have gone down. The neutral site game in Baltimore, which was expecting national attention, Braxton Miller, Heisman Trophy candidate, is there, was $77 in the secondary market, went down to $33 a ticket the day after his injury.
To be fair, I think $33 is perfectly reasonable to go see OSU Navy. I mean, do you want to pay a lot more than that to watch Navy?
I guess it's a pro stadium. I would love to pay $33 to watch an Ohio State game in a pro stadium, but
I would too, but not 77.
I don't think I'd pay 77. But again, I've seen Braxton Miller. I think they were looking for that East Coast and Washington area demographic that wanted to see a Heisman Trophy winner, and that's just out the window. Part of the reason still is Navy still has a bunch of tickets for sale at face value. So Their face value is actually higher than what they're going for in the secondary market right now.
Here's a little minor aside point. Do you think their trip to Baltimore has anything to do with the two East Coast teams now being in the Big Ten? Do you think that's some kind of scandalous ploy to attract media attention on the East Coast?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's all connected. No, I have no idea. The Rutgers and Maryland are now in the Big Ten. I think that has a little bit to do with Ohio State going to Baltimore. I mean, to
it's
say
a weird trip to start
say,
the season.
To say it doesn't mean anything is wrong, but to say it was designed this way is probably incorrect as well. It does mean something. Maryland's real close to Baltimore. Big Ten is now in Maryland. Big Ten is now in New Jersey, Pennsylvania. Big Ten is moving east and trying to grab that East Coast demographic. And that will do it for this week's edition of After the Score. Be sure to tune in next week for a full recap of the OSU-Navy game.
Until then, you can always follow us on Twitter at After the Score.
You can also find a full archive of all of our episodes using the WOSU Public Media mobile app. That's a free download to the Apple App Store and Google Play Store. Until next week, I'm Thomas Bradley.
And I'm Steve Brown.